RMCP 4 WG Land Investments versus Capital One Bank. Vivian Tech Components, Christopher M. Harris, Frank J. Friedman, Aaron D. Apple, for the appellate. Matthew A. Fitzgerald, for the appellate.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Vivian Katzentonis, and I'm before the court on behalf of the appellant, RECP 4 WG Land Investors, LLC. This is a case about a contract for valuable development rights, which the court below ruled as a matter of law is impossible to perform. Although the court did not sit as fact finder below, the impossibility ruling, as well as the others for which we have assigned error, are premised upon disputed factual findings. In particular, the court determined that the amount of development rights available to landowners in Tyson's Corner is infinity. In other words, the court determined that a landowner in Tyson's can build buildings as tall as the Empire State Building on every square foot of property. The notion that infinite of far is available to landowners in Tyson's is a complete fallacy. It's contrary to the express terms of the Fairfax Comprehensive Plan upon which it relies, as well as the law. It's erroneous as a matter of fact. It was contradicted plainly by the record below, as well as Capital One's own admissions and testimony of experts. And in any event, and importantly, it's unnecessary and irrelevant to the enforcement of our contract provision. The court, in making this finding, also failed to give effect to the plain terms used by the parties in their agreement. Instead, the court rewrote the bargain and inserted new and conflicting terms that appear nowhere in the agreement. That's the impossibility ruling. There was also a ruling that the formula was unworkable. And I'm going to address that, as well as there was findings related to whether we were precluded, WG Land precluded from asserting damages based on the objective value of those rights and standing to enforce the covenant.
Well, it was actually the comprehensive plan that eliminated the cap on FAR, right?
No, the comprehensive plan does not eliminate the cap on FAR. The comprehensive plan is a guideline. It sets forth parameters by which the applicant will follow when they apply for additional FAR. The guideline doesn't confer any property rights. That's always been through the zoning process.
Okay, but the county plan placed a maximum FAR on the area initially, right?
No. It never, not in 2000 and not in 2010, Your Honor. If that were the case, then specific numbers would have been included in the contract in the formula. The county plan merely sets guidelines as to ratios that you can apply for and then sets forth other conditions. There's bonus intensity.
Right, well, what is 1.5 within 1,000 feet of a metro station, 1.0 between 1,000 and 1,600 feet away?
Right. That, Your Honor, under the comprehensive guideline, the recommended intensities for areas from 1,000 feet was up to 1.5, or depending on the distance. That, again, is not it's not conferring available rights. It's a guideline of what they're planning in those areas. You can, if you look specifically at Exhibit T at the bottom, it says that the intensities that you go to the development guidelines. If you go to specifically the 2000 guidelines, and I'll reference, Your Honor, to JA3297, it says the plan is implemented through the approval of development proposals. That was what existed in 2000. That's what existed in 2010. And if you look at the contract at 28.7b, even little b, right, when it's allocating what's available, what's the existing plan provide for the base Capital One FAR and the base West Group FAR, they put in a number for the Capital One of 200,000, but there's no number there for West Group's base FAR. That's because based on the existing plan, you can't put a number in there. You don't know what's available. You won't know until you do the plan. You get bonus densities for housing. It's always done through rezoning. That was the case in 2000, and that's the case today in 2010. So,
Do you dispute there was a seismic shift? I mean, that business is done in a completely different way now?
Absolutely, Your Honor, okay. I dispute that. The way it's always been, and this, again, is admitted by Capital One, by their witnesses, and Mr. Zook was their expert who was the director of planning. He testified that it's always, that FAR is always conferred through the zoning process, and it wasn't a seismic change. We cited in our brief, in our reply brief at page 6, Your Honor.
So something that had never before been the case is just a big nothing.
It's a big nothing, Your Honor. It's always, the Fairfax County plans always give guidelines. There's different factors to consider: traffic, infrastructure, open space, how much FAR we're going to have for office, the ratios, the building height restrictions. If you go through every single district and look at those guidelines, there's a number of factors that have to be considered. So this is not, there's no seismic change whatsoever. And again, we reference even specific provisions that use similar language as the one that's used in the plan today. So, you know, in this case, again, what the contract provided was that the parties anticipated Metro's coming. And the plan specifically provided that when Metro came, as a result of the new zoning opportunities that were created because of the Metro coming, that additional FAR will be allocated between the parties, with the vast majority going to WG Land. That was always anticipated. And the formula has two purposes. One was to limit development on the land to what Capital One actually paid for. They didn't pay for these development rights. They came to WG, to West Group, and said, we only need this amount of FAR. We're buying the property, we only need a limited amount of FAR, and that's what they paid for. And the developer said, great, and the remaining goes back to us. And that's what was agreed to under the agreement.
What about the argument that there's now a state law overlay, and that a locality has to enact an ordinance that allows the transfer of development rights, and Fairfax County hasn't done that, and so does that have any impact on
No,
this?
That's a red herring for two reasons. Okay. One, that statute is just merely a permissive enabling statute. It's not a preclusive statute. And number two, if you look at the Fairfax County Comprehensive Plan itself, it contemplates the conveyance and transfer of density. It talks about it's through joint application. And the plan itself envisions that. It talks about you can transfer and convey density within a quarter mile of the ratio of the metro station. So that's a red herring. It's absolutely...
Right, but at least as to properties outside of that, wouldn't it have a limiting effect if you're beyond that quarter mile?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because, again, I mean, there is provisions. If you're, it depends on, obviously, it's going to be determined eventually by the Board of Supervisors, but there's no preclusion. In other words,
you would just ask for a variance or whatever the
right
term is, and then it's up to them and their discretion to grant it or not.
Right, and the majority of our properties are within the quarter mile, so it doesn't matter anyway, but in any event, yes, you can do it by joint application. Again, Capital One's experts testified that it's capable of being done, and it can be done by joint application. So,
let me ask you this. Assuming you're correct in everything you're saying this morning, how do you calculate the damages in this case?
Well, Your Honor, you know, we've asked for two different theories, right? So, one, we've asked for an injunction, and that's a prohibitory injunction to keep the status quo, to prevent Capital One from using the FAR that we own. It's our FAR. But with regard to the event they keep that FAR, then there's an objective value, just as the court noticed in Bryant v. Peckinpah, there's an objective value to those property rights that we're entitled to assert. And both Capital One and our experts did an appraisal of that property, of those FAR development right properties, and determined the value exceeded over $100 million.
Right, the rejoinder to that, if I understand it correctly, is, but whenever your client has gone to the county and asked for development rights, they've gotten them. So it's not like they're bumping up against a ceiling where they could add another 10 stories or whatever. whatever they've asked for, they've gotten, so how have they been damaged under that response?
Well, again, there's two things. First of all, that it doesn't, the formula and this requirement doesn't depend on what we need or don't need, right? It's not a sharing provision.
Yeah, but any breach of contract, you still have to prove damages.
Right, and we are harmed because we're being harmed by a competing development. We sold the property to a bank and who wanted limited development rights. We're developing on our property, right? So to the extent they build a hotel on their property, we may not be able to build a hotel on our property.
But has any of that happened as opposed to theoretical?
Well, that's why we've asked for an injunction, because those harms would be, it'd be speculative, right, at this point until you see exactly what they build. But with regard to the damages, we have been harmed because that's our FAR rights. They didn't pay for them. We own those rights. And if the Capital One sold the property with those rights, we'd be entitled to our share of those rights. That's our valuable development rights, which
council
never paid for.
Looking at Joint Appendix 1109, going back to this, I must be misunderstanding your factual premise, because the 2013 edition of the Fairfax County Comprehensive Plan says, in other words, no individual site within these areas should be subject to a maximum FAR.
Right, Your Honor, but what the language says in 1109 specifically is that the intensity of redevelopment projects within a quarter mile to metro stations should be determined through the rezoning process. In other words, no maximum FAR, right, is what it says. And what they're saying is we're not going to give you a prescriptive guideline.
I thought you told Justice McCullough nothing had changed.
Right. Nothing has changed because
this was the case at the time you entered into the agreement?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I must have misunderstood. No, you're correct. There was a change in the fact that Exhibit T, the existing overlay, had different parameters, and now the language...
And limits. Limits.
No, they were never limits, Your Honor. The limits are determined. You can always apply for more or less. Right, it's up to the discretion of the Board of Supervisors is what you are entitled to on your property. That's always been the case, and so it's always that you have to look at the totality of the guideline, the plan, in order to determine how much is available to your property, and that's determined through the rezoning process. So while the language, you can technically look at one and say, did that change? It didn't change. Both plans then and now required you to go through rezoning in order to determine the amount of FAR. To read it otherwise, it would be to read out the language that it's determined.
Well, I understand you have to go through the zoning process to get FAR, but at the time you entered into the contract, areas were subject to a maximum FAR. Is that correct?
Your Honor, again, I would not say that they were subject to a maximum FAR. There's never, the plan itself does not confer a maximum FAR. It gives a guideline. By statute, it's a guideline. So it doesn't provide a prescriptive cap that says you can never exceed this amount. Okay, thank you. I'm going to reserve my additional time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Matt Fitzgerald for Capital One. The issue in this case is whether to enjoin the construction of Capital One's new headquarters in Tysons. This is a 32-story building that's almost completely built. It will soon house thousands of Capital One workers. VDOT has rerouted the roads. The sewers have been worked on. And the trial court correctly rejected WG Land's primary argument, which is that this project should be enjoined. There are two separate paths to affirmance in this case. First, contract impossibility. And second, the fact that the plaintiffs have failed to demonstrate entitlement to any form of relief. First, impossibility. So impossibility occurs when a state of affairs contemplated by both parties as the basis of their contract fails or ceases to exist. And here, that state of affairs...
That's different, though, from making a bad deal, where you go into it making assumptions about what the future holds, and it turns out, no, actually, that's not the way the future holds. That's very different from true impossibility.
Yes.
So assuming that, that just making a wrong assumption about how the amended metro overlay might work in the future, why is it impossible to do what they say, which is you make your application, you get your FAR, they get their share?
It's impossible to do what they say because it would read out of the provision. I mean, the formula that the parties agree to is missing a variable now. The variable that used to be in there is the 2000 county plan, which is at page 155 of the record, where it says within 1,000 feet of metro up to 1.5 FAR, within 1,600 feet up to 1.0 FAR. And so that was a variable. That was baked into the parties.
That the the contract expressly references.
Am I correct?
So in other words, they didn't say whatever the zoning map says. They referenced a specific provision of the then existing
Yes, Your Honor. They referenced a single section, which is really a single page of the existing county plan, and that page clearly references essentially the properties at issue here, because it calls out the projected future metro sites and says 1.5 within 1,000 feet of this one, the Westgate one, which is all at 155.
So it's not that it's impossible. It was always possible to go before the Board of Supervisors and say, give me a variance for this following reason, whatever. That was always possible, but this specific contract with this specific formula is no longer possible.
The sharing formula is no longer possible, yes, because up to 1.5, 1.0 has been replaced with, quote, no individual site within these areas should be subject to a maximum FAR. And so what this really all comes out to is this is a very unusual type of contract impossibility, because the thing that makes the contract impossible in this case has hugely benefited both parties. WG Land has gone to the county. They are no longer tethered to Capital One within this 1,000-foot, 1,600-foot radius. They've gone to the county. They've gotten permission to develop some 8.5 million square feet of development, which is huge. Capital One has gotten permission for its some 5 million, and neither of these parties is limited by the other. So the fundamental assumption of this sharing provision, this fractional sharing provision, is that the parties are going to directly limit each other. If Capital One built something big under the 2000 plan, then WG Land wouldn't be able to build anything because the area has to be 1.5 FAR or less.
So it was a fixed pie, and if Capital One got a bigger slice, that automatically shrank whatever left of the pie was there for the other side.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And now, bake as big of a pie as you want.
Yes, essentially. And so one way to think about this, there's an analogy for the alleged injury in this case, and I promise this is a short one. So
better than my pie, I know.
No, the pie is a great one. The pie is a great one, but it's more... So how about this one? There are two parties under the ocean, okay? They have a limited supply of oxygen. They agree that they're going to share this limited supply of oxygen and how they're going to divide it up. They even agree how they're going to share should they get more oxygen. Then the two parties are rescued. They're brought up to the surface. They're no longer under the water. Everybody's breathing happily. And one party says to the other one, you know, you agreed to give me some of your oxygen. And the second party says, if you want more oxygen, breathe in. There's nothing that I am doing that is stopping you from breathing. And the second party says, no, I'm going to sue you over this oxygen. I still have a right to a fraction of your oxygen. That's what WG Land is doing in this case. And so, even apart from impossibility, they fail to show entitlement to any type of damages here. So first, for actual damages, expectation damages are the measure of contract damages. The court asks, how is the plaintiff worse off because of the breach than they otherwise would be? And here there is no answer to that question. If WG Land wants more FAR, they are welcome to go and ask for it. They say that we are holding some 2 million FAR that belongs to them. But if they want more, they should ask the county for it. And in fact, they have. They have developed some 8.5 million FAR, which is meaningfully more than Capital One has. And nothing that Capital One has done has stopped them from doing that.
Suppose the ratio actually were applied and they got their share of these additional FAR units. Could they put them to use on their site?
Well, so if you mean if it were applied after Capital One got its approval for its
right.
number?
Assume for the sake of argument only that the ratio is going to apply and the bottom line is just made a bad deal about an assumed future event. And they get their share, whatever it is.
I would say in that case, there's no reason why they couldn't use it, but there's no reason why they don't already have that. In other words, who's to say the $2 million that Capital One has gotten that they say is theirs isn't already in the $8.5 million that they've requested and gotten? If there's a difference between $8.5 million and $10.5 million for them, the reason why they don't have $10.5 million has nothing to do with Capital One.
Well, suppose the regulators say, and we're not going to give them the extra. Could they say, well, fine, we got them through our deal with the people next door?
I don't think they could do that, Your Honor, because the county has to approve every construction project before it can be built. And so here, what's particularly interesting about the transfer of FAR in this sort of way, which is another reason why this won't work, is the county plan at page Joint Appendix 1111 says that under no circumstances will any transfer of FAR be permitted outside of a quarter mile from the metro. So nobody outside a quarter mile from the metro could possibly buy or receive a transfer of FAR, even if it were legal. Then inside a quarter mile of the metro, why would the FAR have any? Why would any one party pay another or get FAR from another party when they can just go to the county and ask for it? The county's specific governing principle here is that they want to encourage high-intensity development right around metro. That is, encourage the use of mass transit in that way. So nor is there any right in this case to injunctive relief. Under Virginia law, the grant or denial of an injunctive relief has a lot to do with the discretion of the trial court. And the trial court here refused to grant them an injunction for several good reasons. Chief among those is the idea that this is a sharing provision that presumes a limited supply. Saying, oh, really what this is a flat limit on Capital One. No matter what WG Land is doing, Capital One can't go more than a certain amount. Would rewrite the party's bargain. It would also go against the county's stated governing policy, which is to encourage high-intensity development near Metro. And it would also be inequitable, given that WG Land has not sought a preliminary injunction here. And they say that at page 457 of the record, where it says, we're not seeking a preliminary injunction.
So it's really not a status quo injunction. It's a permanent injunction they're seeking.
Yes, exactly. And they're happy to litigate that as the construction project goes up, and it's now pretty much there.
How close are we? Because at some point it's going to be mooted out.
Well, the project is projected to be complete in 2018, and the skeleton of the building is there. If you drive on 495, you'll see it. It's 30 stories high. Hmm. So you asked, Your Honor, one final thing about the enabling statute, the 15.2, 23.1, 2316.2. It's a statute that says, essentially, if localities want to permit the transfer of FAR, they can do so. They should enact an ordinance that has all of these requirements.
And we've dealt with that before, as I recall.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. So this Fairfax County has not enacted such an ordinance, and it's not clear that they would permit a sort of transfer of FAR in any sense, even apart from the fact that the plan says no transfers outside of a quarter mile, and there's no value to it within a quarter mile because any party can go and ask the county for more.
But doesn't that imply you can have transfers within a quarter mile?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Doesn't that imply that you can have FAR transfers within a quarter mile?
I'm not sure it necessarily implies that. It's certainly not an ordinance that satisfies the statute for how you would go about allowing a transfer of FAR separated from the land. So, I mean, there is some discussion in the record of FAR having value, and that discussion is focused on FAR. that is on a particular property sitting there. And so sitting there, you could sell the whole property and you could say the FAR has some value, but that's different from pulling it apart and separating it, you know, as its own sort of ethereal thing that you could exchange or trade. It's not at all clear that that could happen.
Am I correct? At the time of this, the parties entered into this contract, the county had allocated X amounts of FAR to the particular parcel at issue, right?
Yes.
So there was a possibility of more, but what they were looking at was an existing ceiling that might be raised.
There was an existing amount that the whole property had, and then there was some room to grow on that within the existing metro plan. Not a whole lot, but some room to grow up to the 1.0, 1.5. And so the way that it all works time-wise is, in 1992, the property, the large property before they sold Capital One part of it, has the $3 million and some FAR. 1994, the county... 1994 is the dawn of the time when the county recognized this Tysons area for future urban development based on metro. So that's when the 1.5, 1.0 gets into the county plan. 6 years later in 2000, that's when the parties do this contract. So at the time, the up to 1.5, 1.0 had been in the county plan for 6 years, and it had been there since the major revisions that the county did recognizing this area for urban development. So when the judge said... when the trial court said, this is always the way that it had been, that's what that's referring to. So if there are no further questions, I respectfully ask this court to affirm.
Rebuttal.
I wanted to address again Your Honor's comment, and just to make sure we're clear that what the contract provides, it doesn't need to look to the plan. The formula is not dependent upon some number in the plan. With the contract, the exact language in the contract is if as a direct result of the extension of Metro to Tysons, additional FAR is ever available to the property as a result of, and it references the Metro Zoning District in the Fairfax Comprehensive Plan. That's what it's referencing, the attached T. It's the zoning district that's going to be created because of the metro. And the parties are going to be able to rezone from the existing C3 where they're at into a new metro district. That's what the contract says. All it says, it was meant to be broad. If FAR is ever available because of the extension of metro. And we knew at the time that there was going to be this, there was already being prepared the comprehensive plan with this new existing metro district.
Counselor, it's an oversimplification, I realize, but assuming everything you say is right, if you can get FAR on your own, as opposed to getting it from Capital One, where is the damage?
Well, there's two damages, because first of all, that's speculative whether we could get how much FAR we get on our own.
Don't do that to me.
Okay, regardless.
Assume that you can go in and get rezoning and you can get all the FAR you want.
Well, that would...
How are you damaged?
Because the purpose, the covenant had two purposes, dual purpose. One was to limit development on the land, on their land, and that's expressly set forth in the contract, in contract provision 2.1(3).
I understand that. How would that limit it if they can just keep getting it rezoned and get more FAR?
Well, we don't know if that would possibly be true. And it can't. It's not true that they would be able to keep rezoning and get more. It's to limit the development on their property. What the contract says, and they can go try to do whatever they need to do, but what the contract says is when additional FAR becomes available to your property, you're going to allocate the vast majority back to the developer. And part of that, the purpose of that covenant was to limit their development on the property. It's expressly set forth in the agreement.
But what would have been the purpose of a provision like that if everybody could go get FAR on their own and there was no limit? What would have been the purpose of that?
If you believe in infinite density, perhaps you have a point.
But well, I mean, the plan says it.
The plan does... We don't believe on the face of the plan it provides for infinite density. It requires 400 feet building height restrictions. It requires a 2.5 FAR office cap ratio. It has infrastructure and traffic density requirements, open space. It does not, the plan on its face does not provide for infinite amount of FAR. It's contrary to the plan as a whole. So that's not what the contract provides. Again, we're asking merely that the contract be applied, and it's very simple, exactly what the parties intended happened. Metro came, as a result, Capital One rezoned. They got 4.9 million FAR. The 4.9 million FAR is capable of being applied in the formula. Their own experts say it.
Wasn't you, what you really wanted was an anti-competition provision.
It's not an anti-competition. This has
no, it isn't. Well, but I think at the time, limiting FAR and mandating a share back to you was a way to limit competition. Now that FAR has been maximized.
Well, no, Your Honor, they didn't pay for this FAR. They didn't pay for even unlimited FAR. It wasn't paid for in the purchase of the contract. What we said is, as it becomes available, you have to allocate it to us because they didn't want to pay for it at the time. So that would be improper. They would be gaining a windfall. They recognize in their documents, Your Honor, this is all a fallacy. They recognize in the contemporaneous documents that they owed us the FAR after the new plan. And I can cite the court to that in their admissions. They believed, even after the comprehensive plan, number one, they believed that the plan, the 2010 plan, put a cap on the aggregate amount of density that would be allowed, and that has created a bit of a gold rush within the development community. And that's at JA3592. JA3549, Capital One again said that the elimination of a site-specific cap is going to create this land rush, and we could expect to get much less FAR, and that's in the record.
And she answered your question?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Your time is expired.
Thank you.
Call the next day.